Welcome to Marketing Thought Leadership, the podcast that offers insightful discussions on thought-provoking marketing topics. Here's the host of our show, marketing consultant, speaker, author, and educator, and the president of Leverage 2 Market Associates, Linda Popke.
Hi, this is Linda Popke, and welcome to our latest episode of Marketing Thought Leadership. We're here today with Colleen Francis. She is the founder and president of Engage Selling Solutions. She's driven by a passion for both sales and results. Colleen is a successful sales leader for over 20 years who understands the challenges of selling in today's market. She works with business and sales leaders to design, implement, and hone their sales teams to seize market opportunities. She's attracted clients such as Merck, Abbott, Merrill Lynch, Royal Bank of Canada, Dow, Adecco, Trend Micro, UBM, and over 1,000 other leading organizations. And she's the author of the popular book, Nonstop Sales Boom. So welcome, Colleen.
My great pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Terrific. So tell me, first of all, why did you decide to write a book about Nonstop Sales Boom? Why now?
Well, over the last few years, I've seen an increasing trend that is impacting most of the businesses that I work with, and it's rather disturbing.
Okay.
That you know, people go through these absolute booms in sales, and sometimes it's a month or a week or a quarter or a year, and then all of a sudden they have a crash or they have a bust, and they don't see it coming, and they don't realize what's happening. And I started to notice this trend over and over and over again. You know, I sort of figured if it happened once, it was a fluke, but after three or four times, I thought, what's going on here? And when I dove into it, I realized that the bust was completely self-inflicted.
Interesting.
That if you could spot this, if you knew what you were looking for, you could spot it coming and you could fix it before your revenue crashed.
Interesting. So the bust has nothing to do with what's going on in the economy or externally or anything?
No, because what was fascinating to me is I started noticing this when the economy was crashing.
Right.
And clients would say, well, we're busting. We're crashing because the economy's crashed. But then when I looked around, and I do a lot of work inside, you know, with similar companies inside the same industries, and I thought, well, that's interesting because I'm working with another client in your market selling the same products, and they're booming. And so why is it that you, staffing company A, is busting in the same market that company B, staffing company B, is booming? And that's where I realized that in almost all cases, I get that there are some cyclical you know, sales and marketing trends. Like if you're a company that makes only Halloween candy,
yeah, that's true. Yep.
But it's not economically driven at all.
Wow. So why are these cycles so prevalent? What causes these things to happen?
Well, they're caused because people stop looking around for opportunities. So, for example, if the sales team is closing deals and closing deals and closing deals, and they're overrun with opportunities right now, and they're neglecting the leads that marketing is sending them, marketing might shut down the funnel or slow down on marketing programs, which we see happen all the time,
right?
Because they say, well, hey, if the sales team can't keep up with what we've got, then why would we continue to give them good leads, because they're going to get stale? But then when all those leads are closed and the sales team doesn't have anything to close, they have to start from scratch building that pipeline again. So that... But we also see that salespeople stop prospecting on their own because they're so caught up in that closing of the business.
Interesting.
You know, they don't like to prospect. And then the
right.
third thing I find really fascinating, and we see this in mature markets with sales reps who are very mature in their business, is that they don't want to call on new customers. They really enjoy the account management or the farming process.
Mm-hmm.
And they ignore leads that are passed to them. And I'm sure the marketing professionals on this call see this all the time, where they're producing really good, strong, warm leads, and they pass them off to sales reps who delay calling them back or neglect them completely because they get caught up in servicing their existing customers, and those leads go stale, and as a result, the pipeline never gets filled, and then they have a crash in their revenue.
Right, and of course, that's usually marketing's fault, right? That's what we hear from sales.
Well, of course, and you know, one of the things that we are really strong advocates of, that in order to create this nonstop sales boom, one of the first things that has to happen is sales and marketing have to be in 100% alignment with what a qualified lead or a quality lead is. Because in many cases, you're right, marketing blames sales for not following up on leads they say are excellent. Sales blames marketing for saying, you're sending me terrible leads, and it's because nobody has sat down and actually clearly defined what a quality lead looks like and how many of them that they need on a monthly or quarterly basis in order to fill the pipeline.
That's interesting. So we're all trying to do this, but nobody's really sure about what it is we're trying to do.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think it's funny. One of the software companies I was working with recently, the sales team was complaining that they weren't getting enough leads. They were getting a good quality of lead. They have a very well-defined marketplace. But the marketing team was saying, well, we're sending you enough leads. But marketing didn't really know how many leads sales needed in order to hit their programs, their targets. So once we got the two together and sat down and said, no, in order for sales to hit their recurring revenue number of X, you need, 1.5 times what you're doing. And marketing went, oh, why didn't you tell us?
Right.
Programs were changed and programs were modified and increased. But it's amazing to me. This is a relatively small company, less than $50 million in revenue. So it's not like marketing's on the opposite side of the country,
Right.
In the same office.
Just in the next room, yes.
Yeah. They weren't communicating that. And so it's really critical that, sales and marketing are on side as well as all the other departments so that we create this holistic view of what's required inside the organization to really make the organization sell and create this nonstop sales boom.
Excellent. And is there any other things that need to happen? I know you talk about this whole life cycle. So tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, I believe that the client engagement model needs to be circular, or 3D, you could call it that. We need to have a 360-degree view. We call this sales radar, because what's critical to creating a nonstop sales boom is that you have visibility into all the leads that are available to you or all the opportunities, regardless of where they are.
Uh-huh.
So, if we think about the client engagement model being the first thing, of course, is net new business. We want a brand new business. That's what we call the client attraction stage. So what are we doing to attract brand new business into our sales and marketing funnel?
Right.
And it's important that we're doing that, because clients leave for any number of reasons that are out of your control, right? I mean, people go out of business, they switch jobs, mergers, acquisitions. You as a company switch markets. And so you constantly need to have this lifeblood of new business coming into your organization.
Right.
Then we move to what we call participation. And participation is all of the things that you're doing to qualify, close, and onboard that client quickly. And one thing that sales departments could be doing, or companies could be doing, to really improve the total client lifetime value is make sure that sales stays engaged in that onboarding process. The faster a client is onboarded or using your product, the less likelihood they have for buyer's remorse,
mm-hmm.
and the more likelihood they have for quick results, which then marketing can turn into case studies and testimonials and proof points that are going to drive both growth from that client but also net new business into the pipeline. So this stage is really critical, and I'm advocating for quite a fundamental shift in the way organizations think, and that is when sales gets the PO or the credit card or whatever it is they do, they don't just ring the bell, do the happy dance, and move on, but they actually stay engaged with the process alongside of the delivery team, whoever that looks like, to make sure that the client's onboarded as quickly as they can. And marketing should really be interested in that, because the faster we can get results from these clients, the faster you can leverage that into more business.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a novel approach, because usually we say we close the business, we've got a quota, we go on to the next account.
Yes.
So how does that work with compensation? Isn't that kind of a different model?
Well, it's not really a different model. I believe that salespeople need to be compensated for growth and new business, because salespeople do whatever they're paid to do. So if you don't pay them for growth, they will neglect your current client base.
Right, exactly.
We see that all the time. I actually had a hotel vice president of sales and marketing, you know, for one of the big national chains, say to me, I don't understand why our sales team doesn't reach out to our existing clients. They, you know, they don't even ever call them, and there's tons of business there to be had. And then I found out he doesn't pay them for repeat business. And I said, well, duh, why would a salesperson pick up the phone and call an existing customer if they're not going to get paid on the booking that they're going to get?
Sure.
Makes sense, right? So I asked him if he knew he was paying them to ignore his customer base.
There we go. Yeah, we used to say sales reps are coin operated, right? So you put the coin in, they do what they're told. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
My business partner likes to call them automatons.
Like, automatons,
hey.
There you go. So tell me more about the sales radar, because tell me what's different about this.
So sales radar, one of the things I love about the sales radar analogy is if you think about radar, you know, on a ship or on a plane, the whole thing is designed for you to see both the obstacles but also the opportunities in front of you, above you, below you, behind you, to the right, to the left. And it forces you to be looking all around. It's sort of this continuous sweep.
Yep.
As opposed to the traditional sales view, which is unidirectional, like
laying
tracks across the prairies, right? We're just going in one direction. Because what we have found that good sales and marketing teams can do is there's a client who comes into the top of the funnel, they're in client attraction, right? They're a brand new opportunity. But they're so engaged and they're so excited about the prospects of doing business with you that they already are ranting and raving about how wonderful you are and getting other people to come along with them, and so they can be in stage four of client engagement and stage one at the same time, stage four being leverage. They're acting as a testimonial source. I know I've done that.
Yep.
Been into a shop or bought something or even seen something online that I want to buy, and I'm already raving about it to my friends even though I haven't even tried it yet. So Sales Radar allows customers to be in more than one state of engagement at a time, and it also isn't linear. They can move very quickly from participation to leverage.
Yep.
For example, participation says we get them to be using the product, and then the next stage is growth. But you might bring a client in who can't grow. They make an initial order with you of the absolute maximum amount of product they will ever buy from you, in the next couple of years. So they can't grow, but they can immediately be leveraged into a testimonial or a case study. So it really allows us to work in multiple stages at a time and see how the client can be fully utilized both for your benefit but also for their benefit.
That's important, I think, yeah. Because it's all of a sudden a different way of looking at things and different way of doing that. So how do sales forces have to change to implement this? Because it's a different mindset.
Well, you hit the nail on the head there. It's a mindset change more than anything. First of all, sellers have to recognize that the sales bust is completely self-inflicted.
Yep.
Once you take responsibility for the fact that your sales have crashed, then you can set about fixing it. But if you constantly blame the economy or the product, you know, I talked to an inside sales manager the other day who was blaming a company program that was rolled out 5 years ago and doesn't exist today for the lack of sales in his department today.
Wow.
And I called his boss and said, I honestly don't think there's any hope for this guy.
Wow.
So they have to take responsibility, sales and marketing both, because marketing has a very fundamental role to play in the lead flow for most organizations. So first of all, we take responsibility, and then we get to work at all aspects. So the other way either organizations might need to change or sellers might need to change is they have to recognize that they play a role in both the attraction of new prospects and the growth of their existing. They can't just do one or the other.
Right.
I find in most companies, companies will suffer dysfunction if they split up the sales function between that hunter and farmer. We can call it those traditional terms, as opposed to leveraging one person to both bring in an account and nurture that account.
So it's traditionally, I do see this a lot in larger organizations where you've got the people out there doing the hunting and then the farming and the nurturing goes on by more of an account manager. So what you're saying is that the account managers need to be out looking for business, and the guys out looking for business need to be doing some account management as well.
Exactly. So,
okay.
Like, I do have one Fortune 500 company who sells through a resale channel, and they do have their team divided up into those account managers who manage their existing account and those pure, you know, traditional hunters who are looking to bring on new channels.
Right.
But that account management team still has a responsibility to get referrals and help drive new business through their channel. So they're doing both. And, of course, the hunting team has a responsibility in their market to nurture any channel partner that needs help. So there, I think that the skill that's most valuable to organizations is someone who's willing to do both.
Got it.
Now, the other thing that I find fascinating, especially when having this conversation with sales and marketing leaders, is we have to recognize that the best sellers today have a real blurred line with marketing, and they're becoming more marketing focused, if you can imagine.
Interesting.
So that doesn't mean they're replacing marketers, but it means that they're really learning how to take what good marketing departments do and either replicating it for themselves, so they're marketing themselves, or leveraging what that department is doing, you know, in a way with their client base. But they're not just sort of turning over their entire pipeline to marketing and saying it's your responsibility. They're working alongside and saying, oh, okay, you're doing those things. How can I leverage them? How can I take what you're doing on social media and apply it to my social media? How can I take the white papers, the testimonials, the case studies, the articles that you're writing and send them out to my client base? Because they recognize that they have to be seen as experts or have access to expertise in the marketplace. And they have discovered that ubiquity, marketing and sales ubiquity, is the key to creating this nonstop sales boom. In other words, I see you everywhere. We get to the point where they say, Linda, I have to do business with you because you're everywhere.
You're everywhere. Every time I turn around, I see you. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I absolutely agree. In my new book, which is coming out in a few months, called Marketing Above the Noise, I talk about how all this time sales and marketing have been kind of like siblings, like sibling rivalry, right?
You know?
And we, you know, it's our fault, it's their fault, you know, we just don't work together. And how much more effective we could be if we could start with the process of saying, who's the customer, what do they need, and how do we make this stuff happen? Instead of blaming, you know, well, they didn't give me enough leads. Well, the leads they gave us were bad. Well, they didn't follow up on the leads. All that kind of stuff that's gone on forever and ever between sales and marketing groups.
Yeah,
so it's
absolutely
nice to see that.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And it all needs to dovetail. So a large organization that I'm working with right now, their marketing department is really focused on an awareness campaign because they've realized that they are somewhat a best-kept secret. And this is a multi-billion dollar organization. So, you know, they're doing TV ads and they're doing huge amounts of marketing. And the sales team then is taking that and they're using it to their advantage. Oh, maybe you saw our most recent TV ad. Or they're sending the links, the online links to those TV commercials to their clients and saying, hey, pass this to any prospects that you might know. You know, the marketing team is getting ready to run these amazing virtual contests, social media contests. And so the sales team is using that with their client base to get them excited to get referrals into other customers. So, you know, it's really interesting how the two working together then cause people to say, you know, I don't know how I heard about you, but I need to do business with you. And that's what then creates this nonstop sales boom, because not only are you doing direct sales activity, the traditional ones, cold calling and networking, but all of these indirect pushes out to the marketplace are causing the phone to ring.
Absolutely. Well, this is exciting, and we could talk for hours and hours, but we probably need to cut this off. So let me ask you quickly, where can I find out more about all of these four phases of engagement, sales radar, and just in general how to create a nonstop sales boom?
Well, you can visit our site that we have set up for the book, which is salesboombook.com, and, of course, our website, Engage Selling, where we spend a lot of time talking about these concepts, including a webinar that's posted that you're welcome to register for free. You get the replay right away.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Great. Well, that's fantastic. Well, thank you, Colleen. It's been fun to have you here and find out about this stuff, and hopefully we'll have everyone starting their own nonstop sales boom.
I love it. I want everyone to create a nonstop sales boom because I know it's perfectly accessible for every business.
Fantastic. This is Linda Popke, and we've been here with Colleen Francis. talking about nonstop sales boom. Until next time, thank you for listening to Marketing Thought Leadership.
We hope you enjoyed this edition of Marketing Thought Leadership, brought to you by Leverage 2 Market Associates. If you'd like to find out how powerful marketing results can transform your organization, contact us at www.leverage2market.com.